If talking about money makes you squirm, you might want to think twice before you open an account with the bank of mum and dad. Because the thing is, banks tend to give loans, but parents tend to give gifts. So when parents are also the bank, the line gets blurry fast. And despite the increasing number of people relying on cash assistance from their family to get into the property market, among other things, we haven't gotten better at talking to each other about the strings attached to the cash. And new research from the University of Newcastle is highlighting the tricky emotional and legal consequences of lending your loved ones cash, which you're about to hear more about soon. But I want to hear from you as well. How has this played out in your family? If you have supplied a large sum of money to your kids or you have been the recipient of such sum, I'd love to hear how you came to the arrangement. My number is 1-300-225-576. I am aware that you may be dealing with mobile phone outages today. So if you do have reception, I extra want to hear from you. Tell me how the bank of mum and dad has played out in your family. I want to chat to you about it because with me are two of the team behind this new research, Dr. Julia Cook, a youth sociologist, and Dr. Mirella Atherton, a senior lecturer in the School of Law and Justice, both at the University of Newcastle. Julia, Mirella, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you, Tegan.
So, Julia, I might start with you. If I lent my mate $100,000 with a handshake and no paperwork, people would call me an idiot. Why do we think it's okay to do that with our own kids?
I really think it just comes down to trust. So we have a really strong sense of trust in family, and there's often the attitude from parents that the children are going to inherit it one day anyway. So it's seen as, you know, something of an early inheritance in many cases. But yeah, it is quite an interesting social phenomena that there's that level of trust around those sums of money.
The Bank of Mum and Dad has become like a bit of a keyword. It was on the long list for the Macquarie Dictionary Word of the Year last year. Do we know how commonplace it is as a practice?
So it's really hard to say because these are outside market transactions. So there's no very reliable way of tracing it. So in research, we've seen numbers anywhere from 20% to 60% of first home buyers having some help from the Bank of Mum and Dad. And you know, it pops up somewhere between the fourth and ninth largest lender relative to the amounts lent by other banks. So we know it is a major prospect in the property market.
So it's kind of competing with major banks then.
Yeah, it is. So it's a significant number of people. And I think the thing that really interests me about it is that we don't tend to talk about it outside of families. So perhaps more of the people around you than you would think have engaged in, you know, either being a recipient or a lender in the Bank of Mum and Dad.
So Mirella, what are some of the legal issues that are materialising here?
Okay, well, distinguishing between a gift and a loan can be difficult, and especially in the absence of documentation. So in law, we say that equity is suspicious of gifts and presumes a bargain. So, you know, what does this sort of play out to be? Well, if there's no paperwork, then it's really difficult to tell if it is actually a gift or a loan.
Because I wanted to ask you what's more common, gifts or loans, but it sounds like no one really knows.
Well, this is it. This is, you know, the passage of time can, you know, cause a gift to translate into a loan, or it can work around the other way because, you know, we have ups and downs in life and, you know, sometimes even the bank might require a gift letter for the loan. So these terms, although they seem pretty straightforward, can, you know, can transfer their meanings.
So, Julia, is it just parents giving kids money to buy property? That's the kind of definition that we usually think of, but is it more broad than that?
Definitely broader than that. So it's not always parents. In my study of family financial assistance with home ownership, I found that siblings were also getting into the mix. So I found siblings were in some cases providing money to each other, but in that case, it was always a loan, far less ambiguous. And there's also, you know, a lot of financial assistance for other things. So in my own study, although I was looking at entry into home ownership, I followed the participants over time and I found that, you know, even those that had had some money to get into the property market started to experience mortgage stress and often, you know, needed to come back for further assistance around particularly things like childcare.
Mm. You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor. I'm with Dr. Julia Cook and Dr. Marilla Atherton. They're both at the University of Newcastle, and they're both authors on a new study just highlighting some of the legal and interpersonal consequences of lending your loved ones cash, otherwise known as the bank of mum and dad, or siblings, or other relationships, as we've just heard Julia detail. If you've either been a banker or a recipient of the bank of mum and dad, I'd really love to know how that played out for your family. Were there conversations that you had? Did you realise down the track that you wished you'd had some conversations? You are sending me some texts as well. Greg says, when we sold the family home, each of our four children got some of the money for a deposit on a home or a unit. We treated this as an early inheritance, as you said before, but for one of our kids who is a day carer and on a low wage, we loaned the money of a couple of $100s just to help with bills, as he has little savings to act as a buffer. And if they don't pay us back, we can absorb the loss. Usually they do, and if they don't, that's fine. Well, Libby, you have called in on 1300 225 576. You lent your daughter money and things didn't go to plan.
No, not at all.
Tell me the story.
Okay. It was about 12 years ago now, but yes, I lent my my daughter a lump sum of money and for her to get into the housing market. She was in Sydney, and I said, look, you know, I've got this money here. Why don't you use it and get yourself into the housing market, because you're not getting anywhere renting. So, however, we went to the solicitors, had it all drawn up. Yes, it was you know, a loan, and any time she wanted to opt out and pay me out, that was fine. So anyhow, 10 years went by. She dropped off the radar a little bit, and I was getting a bit worried. She did put that money into real estate, and she dropped off the radar and sort of was avoiding me. So I just said, look, I think it's time that I got my funds back. And she says, no, that was an inheritance. That's my inheritance, and so on, denied it. You know, oh, I'd have to win lotto to pay you back. So, you know, she admitted she did have the money. And however, I ended up, I said, well, look, in 60 days, if I haven't got the money, you know, it's going to have to go to court. But in the meantime, I'm sending you the documentation from the lawyers, and you can act on that or not. So, however, you know, surprisingly, she took about 2 weeks to get back to me, and I said, "Oh well, she's doing something." She said, "I've had to take out a loan to pay you back." I thought, "Well, yeah, good-o." So I said, "Well, whatever it takes." But yeah, so before 60 days, I got my money back, and I was able to move on with my life. And in the meantime, my husband had passed away, and I got cancer, and So I was going through a terrible state. And yes, and so she hasn't spoken to me since, and it's been over 10 years.
Libby, what a story. I'm just thinking, you know, you kind of go, oh, what could you do differently? But it sounds like you did go through the solicitors at first. You did sort of cover yourself, and it still blew up.
I did. And I don't know what she was thinking, to think that I would give everything I had to her when I have a son as well.
Mm.
And I had nothing to give him when his house was wiped out in the flood. She wouldn't even give him a room to sleep in. You know, so I don't know. She was a beautiful daughter, beautiful. We had a beautiful relationship. But all I can say is I think she may have been influenced by her partner.
Well, Libby, thank you so much for the call. Such a complex one there, but really appreciate, really kind of shines a light on the sorts of issues that Marilla and Julia's research has uncovered. Marilla, Julia, we can't give personalised advice, we can't give legal advice here, but just in broad terms, Marilla, what kind of safeguards can you put in ahead of time to try to stave off that kind of blow up down the line?
Well, what Libby did was exactly right. She had the documentation, in place for the event that something does go wrong and a dispute arises. And I know it can take a little bit of time, but she did get her money back. So that's the main thing to remember, even though, things change in that time. If you do want your money back, then you need to really put something in place to document what's happened. And this is important for gifts as well. If you're thinking about giving the gift, having a gift letter that goes with the gift is really important. So any documentation, and especially for a loan, any details about the repayment terms, the times, the details around the loan and the requirements, all of that is really invaluable when it does come to be paid back.
Julia, what stood out to you in that story?
Well, I think that story, in terms of what I've seen in my research, it's a little unusual because Libby did actually document and, seek formal legal advice. I found that the vast majority of people that I've spoken to have not sought out any professional legal or financial advice. And so they generally don't document the kind of terms of the loan or the gift. So it really stood out to me that that's an example of, someone doing what we would always recommend that they do, which is, get this in writing, get some formal advice.
Mm. Well, Helen, you've called in, you've lent your siblings money and you've got a housing fund for your kids. How do you manage lending to family?
Yeah, so firstly with my children, we've always had this notion that a gift is a gift and it has no strings. So, and I don't know how young people would get into the housing market without help from parents. It would be really tough. So I've been saving for my children to go and buy a house at some point. And so that will just go transfer to them, no strings attached. And I guess if they choose not to buy a house with it, then that's up to them as well. With my sibling, she was in a situation where she needed to get out of a really poor relationship and into a house. And so I had the means to be able to buy her a house. And I just had a lawyer draw up a contract, mostly to protect her, that if anything, because the house is in my name, but if anything happens to me, that it's known that that house actually belongs to her because she pays the repayments on the house. So technically it's, it's her house.
That's a really interesting situation, Helen, and what a blessing, I suppose, that you're able to be that for your family. Thank you so much for the call. Julia, Helen said there a couple of times this idea of no strings attached. Did you find that there were strings attached to financial gifts in your research?
Yeah, so I think the idea of no strings attached is really interesting because I think it's impossible for even a gift to have absolutely no strings attached. So my research involved speaking to parents and children separately, and I found there were always some kind of assumptions about what the relationship would look like going forward, assumptions about things like access to grandchildren, assumptions even sometimes around like the role that children would be playing for adults in their later life. So, I think it is to greater and lesser degrees in various families, but I think a gift is never entirely just a gift.
You are listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor with Dr. Julia Cook and Dr. Mirella Atherton from the University of Newcastle, co-authors on new research looking into the legal and emotional pitfalls that can come with the bank of mum and dad. And I'm asking you to tell me your stories today if you'd like to. My number is 1300 225576. Have you been an account holder at the bank of mum and dad? Have you been doling out money from it? How did you navigate it? Was it a gift? Was it a loan? Was it a gift that became a loan or a loan that became a gift? I'm also getting a lot of texts from you. Eve says, we'd love to help our daughter buy a house, but have to work out how. With the current de facto laws, if she breaks up with the boyfriend she's currently living with, he would then be entitled to half of what we have put into the house. Of course, he's a wonderful human being who we adore, but even wonderful people can do less than wonderful things where there is hurt and money involved. This was a theme that came up in another caller before. Mirella, what happens if you want to give money to your kids but you're not sure about their partner?
Oh, this is a tricky area, and it's a little bit of a grey area. It came up in the research, and Julia will be able to talk about this actually, because, you know, if there is a breakup, the text is right in terms of, you know, they could share half each. And so if that's not your intention, I think you need to document that when you do give that gift or loan. So, but I'll pass over to Julia.
Yeah, in terms of in the research, that was definitely a consideration that some parents had. So for some of them, they were waiting until the couple were married, or waiting until they reached a certain milestone before they felt comfortable providing money. In other cases, their provision of money was dependent on the other set of parents also providing some money to kind of spread the risk, as it was. And yeah, so there were lots of different ways of that being kind of seen, but I also had a couple of cases of it going a bit wrong. So for one of my participants, she ended up essentially paying off her daughter's ex-boyfriend so that he would stop trying to claim part of the house that they had lived in together and that the daughter owned.
Okay. Yeah, Mirella, what are we seeing in the courts?
Oh, well, there's about 46 property disputes that have been resolved in the family court just in 2026. Now, these will be a mix of all different types of things, you know, from, you know, siblings to parents and children to, you know, separations and all of that. But they are showing up in the courts. Definitely this is an issue in legal centres as well. As you know, we have the legal centre in the building in New Space on Hunter Street in Newcastle, and anyone with any issues, any listeners that are in the Newcastle area can come up and see a solicitor if they need legal advice for free.
Well, you're telling me your Bank of Mum and Dad stories on 1300 225 576. Nick, you gave your kids a loan that became a gift. How did that go?
Yes, well, Tegan, one of the things that was, when it was in the loan phase, was that they had to put that money in an offset account to their mortgages. So if people are unfamiliar with that, that just means they borrowed money from a bank. But if you put that money in an offset account, it offsets the interest they have to pay. So we put in the full amount of the loan, which meant that every month when they made their repayments, they were actually paying off the principal, they were paying off the capital. So it was kind of an enforced saving. So they still had to pay for their houses, but they really benefited from that by not having to pay any interest.
And then when did you switch it over into a gift?
Oh, about 3 years later or 4 years later, something in that order. Yeah, we just kind of did that. We didn't tell them that we were going to do that. We didn't really plan a timescale for it, and then we were fortunate enough to be in that position to do that.
Oh, well, nice work, Nick. Thanks so much for the call. Bill, you were a broker for a lot of years. You had a way that you'd approach parents wanting to help their kids buy a house. Tell me about it.
Yeah, correct. So normally, if the kids didn't have enough deposit, the parents would chip in as they do. But the parents were often concerned that they wouldn't get that money back. So if the child sort of met a partner and the partner decided to split up, and the partner would then be entitled to sort of take some of the proceeds and run. So what the parents wanted to be sure of was if the house sold, the money would come back to them. The money they put in would come back to them. So often what would happen is, they would borrow the majority of the money through a major bank, and that major bank would place the first mortgage over the property, and then mum and dad would come along and place a second mortgage over the property, so that if the house sold, the major bank would get their money back automatically, so would mum and dad, and any money that was left over would go to the child.
Oh, it literally was like a bank of mum and dad.
It was literally like a bank of mum and dad. So mum and dad would go to a solicitor, and the solicitor would register a mortgage over the property on their behalf. The cost was sort of something like $1,500, it just guaranteed mum and dad's money.
Bill, thanks for the call. Mirella, you're our resident legal expert today. Does that sound legit to you?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of options. It's really for the listeners to work out what they're trying to do, what their intention is, what they, you know, want to see for the future and as time goes by, just so that there's no, misunderstandings.
Lots of texts talking about contracts around this. Helena says, I've lent a large sum to a child, legally binding contract. Why would you lend to your kids without a contract? Very unwise if you don't. But Chris says, the cost of having a legal document drawn up if you loan your children money is criminal. I ended up writing my own letter, which we all signed and witnessed. Saved me $5,000, which meant I could lend extra. Mirella, what are the barriers to people getting legal advice?
Well, it's probably barriers about, just not knowing what to expect. And with legal centres, there'll be one in your local area, where you can go and see a solicitor and talk about your intentions. It's really something that we need to get out into the community is go and seek legal advice because it can save you a lot of money in the end. It costs a little bit sometimes, but it can save an awful lot of worry and, financial loss.
It strikes me when we're talking about parents lending to children, for most of your young life, the parent is in charge and has a lot of power and social capital. But as people get older, sometimes that flips. There's a couple of texts here that sort of speak to that. One says the Bank of Mum and Dad applies not just to one's children, but also to baby boomers, to our elderly parents. My sister and I gave as a gift for 20 years, $2,500 each per month to our elderly mother. She sadly passed at 97 last year. No thought of paying us back, just what we both believed we needed to do, as she had no funds or housing other than a pension. And another person is framing this as a question. If I gift my kids large sums of money, will that impact my eligibility for government or aged care services? As parents age, Julia, this does get murky.
Yes, this is a really tricky one. So gifting money can impact eligibility for things like the aged pension. So definitely an area to seek some advice around. And also an area where some of my research participants were caught out or something that they didn't actually realise until it impacted them.
So Mirella, has the law kept up in this area just with modern families and the financial realities that people are facing?
Well, no, not really. I think, older people might perceive a gift as, in return for a special relationship or help when they need it later on. So the perceptions of people in the community can be broad and we even have some cultural differences as well. So the law can't really keep up with all of that. But we did in our study look around the world. We looked to Canada, to New Zealand, to South Africa, to the other common law countries. And we looked at this idea of lending, or giving money to adult children. And what's happening in Australia is that, there's a presumption of advancement is sort of weakening here. And so we do need that documentation to back up what's actually happened. And that documentation will last whether that older person, gets dementia and gets older and can't remember. That will protect against all of those things.
Julia, what do you hope people take away from this work that you've done?
I hope that they take away that it's really important to have really clear conversations. So, I know it can be really uncomfortable to talk about money, but the thing that really struck me in my study was that often the parent and the child had a slightly different understanding of the funds. So sometimes it was one thought it was a gift and one thought it was a loan, but often kind of less extreme than that. Some misunderstandings around the term or even the intentions around that money being given. So I think have a really clear conversation and don't be afraid to seek professional advice. There was a reluctance to do so amongst many of my research participants because it was seen as something that was a family matter rather than a legal matter or a financial matter. But I think it's really important to kind of draw things up professionally so that things don't go wrong, to protect yourself against that.
Well, Julia, Mirella, thank you both so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. Dr. Julia Cook, a youth sociologist, and Dr. Mirella Atherton, senior lecturer in the School of Law and Justice, both from the University of Newcastle, both authors on this new research on the legal risks of the Bank of Mum and Dad. Thank you as well for sending in your texts this morning. It's been so enlightening to read your different perspectives. Robert says, Bank of Mum and Dad isn't new. My working class parents lent me $3,000 for a deposit for my first home in Balmain, which cost $30,000 in 1978. I repaid it in 18 months. I'm now 74. Another says, Max says, my mum passed away 2 years ago. Our younger son got married last year and needed a new home. Our solution was to provide our son with a registered mortgage using the proceeds of my inheritance drawn up with the help of a solicitor to fund a unit purchase. He doesn't have to repay it or pay interest, but we'll have to change our wills to make amends for both of our kids. And Marion says, my father used to always say, the best way to make enemies of your friends is to loan them money. I guess the same goes for families. It is Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. Coming up next, tourism pays the bills in these towns, but it comes as a cost to the people who actually live there. Now some tourism hotspots are drawing a line, locking gates, and ditching UNESCO status in a quest to find balance.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.